stretch to date.
That was the best I can come up with also on the
fly. That's fine.
Fly.
We'll take it.
One of these times I actually will plan these and they'll be decent, but I think for now it'll work.
I like it. No.
It'll do for now. But
A for effort.
Thank you, Lucky Bird, for their awesome sponsorship. We'll move on now to some World Series talk because we had a playoff series end again a couple nights ago. Another awesome – actually, it was a decent World Series. I actually did watch a few games. I know we talked about not watching a few of these games because they were so boring. But, you know, what's really unfortunate, and I saw a stat. They said that – the Game 6 of the World Series had like 10 million viewers.
Mm-hmm.
The game between the Washington football team and the New York football Giants had 12 million. So like, I don't want to hate on MLB, but like that's bad.
Yeah, let's not hate on MLB today.
That was the only
today.
Thing I wanted to bring right. up, just because I think that's really unfortunate.
Also, in the defense of MLB, and you might know, you probably know this better than me, but when was the last time we had a World Series that was less than compelling? I feel like every time it gets to the World Series, it's like at least a 6-game series,
yep.
And I feel like there are always relatively intriguing storylines. I mean, when the Giants won like every other year, like the Texas Rangers lost in like back-to-back World Series, you had the Royals losing and then coming back the next year and winning. Yep. You had the Cleveland Indians and the Chicago Cubs and the Cubs coming back from 3-1 to get their first in, you know, over 100 years and that. Like, I feel like the World Series, this is what I'm talking about, like baseball, I could not care less about it in the regular season. But once it gets to the playoffs, it is lightning in a bottle. And I can tune in and not be, you know, wanting to shoot myself in the face. Like, I watched, like you mentioned, I watched multiple of these World Series games and was thoroughly entertained the whole time.
One of the good things about the series, too, is that they actually had fans down there in Texas. And I think you could still get a little bit of that environment for the first time all season, really. And this was the first time any of them have played in front of fans. And so they, on the broadcast, they actually brought up a pretty interesting point that there's enough fans that you can hear them, like, specifically what they're saying at you. But there's not enough to like drown out some of those like things that they're actually yelling at you. And so that was one of the things to me that was kind of interesting, because it's like you don't have that atmosphere outside of like minor league. It's like that'll happen at the Indians game. Like, I know those players can hear those fans because there's just not enough to really drown out the specifics of what people are saying. But no, I thought it was a good series. It was an expected series. This was where it was supposed to be. The Dodgers were the best team in baseball all year. And, you know, I picked the Dodgers. I think you picked the Rays. I don't want to, like, make that a big deal or anything, but I was right.
Well, another interesting thing is that I think most people would agree that the two best teams ended up in the World Series, and then the best team ended up winning, which is often not the case in baseball. I don't remember what year it was, but recently, I think it was the Cardinals' most recent World Series. It was like they were kind of
– just expected.
They snuck into the playoffs, and then they just got
one.
Hot.
And they've done that a few different times, actually. But I feel like both them and the – Giants have done that the last few years, where they're not the best team in baseball, but they just have it, and that's really what it takes. But I think the 60-game shortened season was really beneficial to the better teams, because they were already expected to be good. They already had the background and the wherewithal to actually play well. So I think that was really beneficial for the really good teams. But let's talk about the final game, since that's obviously the deciding factor. One of the big talking points was the fact that Kevin Cash took the ball out of Ian Snell's hands after he was just lighting up the Dodgers. And so I think the top three Dodgers in the order were 0-for-9, I think, with like 6 strikeouts up to that point or something. Like,
yeah,
ridiculous.
He had gone through each of them twice. They were 0-for-6 with 6 strikeouts.
And, I mean, he was just dominating them. And Kevin Cash comes out, and you saw Ian Snell even said, like,
Blake.
You know,
his name is Blake Snell.
Oh, that's right. I said Ian twice now.
Blake.
Who's
I said Blake.
Ian, who's Ian Snell? That's definitely a guy, too.
Maybe Blake of the Year.
Oh, it's his brother.
Contestant.
It's his brother.
I'm sure he played for the Indians or something.
I don't feel bad at all. He played for the Mariners. That's why. Oh, he must really suck compared to his brother then. Yeah, that's not good. That's not even his brother. Now I'm all over the place. But he played for the Mariners. That's my excuse. But Blake Snell, now that we have his name correct, he was a stud, and he has been a stud all year. What were your thoughts and opinion as to him, as to the manager taking the ball out of his hands in that situation?
Well, I had Twitter to kind of back me up on this. I mean, obviously, I'm a big baseball fan, and I know baseball through and through. But in the moment when I was watching, I was like, why are you doing this? He had it was one out in the sixth.
Yeah, he had a guy on.
Got through
out.
Five and a third innings, and he gave up one single? Was that
I think
it?
That was the first hit, yeah.
I don't know, man. And it was heartbreaking, too, to listen to Blake Snell and to after the game and the mm-hmm. conviction that he had and the belief that he had in himself. And it wasn't cocky. It wasn't arrogant. He was just so
direct.
He trusted his preparation. He trusted that he knew that he was going to make the adjustments. He understood that this was going to be the third time around, that he was going to be facing the batters. But I don't know, man. That really sucked. I mean, obviously, it wasn't a great week for analytics in general across the sports spectrum, but especially in this. And I heard a comparison that I thought was kind of interesting, in that the Rays are the Milwaukee Bucks of the MLB. Great regular season team. They keep their minutes or their innings very closely monitored so that everybody's fresh for the playoffs. But then once you get to the playoffs, you're still living by that strategy instead of, you know, recognizing it's the playoffs, it's a different breed, it's a different animal. You need your studs, you need your aces, you need your stars to put in a little bit more work, just because that's how things work in the postseason. And they didn't do that. I guess the counter argument is you don't get away from what got you to the World Series in the first place. Yeah. But I feel like you just have to have some level of recognition and observation and just like tap into the human element. I mean, you could see that Blake was dealing.
He was.
And then Nick Anderson comes in, which is apparently what the answer was supposed to be in relief of Blake Snell. And then he throws it in the dirt and ball gets past Zunino. And then
Rays lose.
Yeah, so then they get that tying run. It was tough. It was really rough, man.
And I do get that. I actually, in the moment and after the fact, talking with friends, I defended the move mainly because of two reasons. First off, Kevin Cash has done this his entire managerial career. Yeah, he's always been a guy who's kind of funky with his pitching staff. So that was to be expected. The other thing is he specifically has been doing this to his starters all of this year. He doesn't like, and the stats and numbers back it up, his pitching staff does not get through the lineup the third time very well. And it was even, the evidence to even back that up was in game two when Blake Snell went four innings and was absolutely dealing. He had nine strikeouts. And then he comes out, goes through the third time through the lineup and gives up two earned runs and gets pulled. Like, I mean, it just had happened three games prior. And, you know, so to me, it probably was the right decision to be made from a managerial standpoint. Because had he pulled him and had they won, nobody would be talking about this. But the problem with that statement, though, too, is that goes down to the whole foundation of coaching, and that always gets discussed. Like, if you do this thing and it goes well, you're the best coach of all time. You do the exact same thing and something goes wrong, now you're the worst coach.
Well, it's all results-based.
And it is. And that's the problem, I think, because managers are in essentially a lose-lose situation because they're never going to get praised for their decision-making to the point where they get destroyed when they do make a certain decision. And that's just kind of my thinking.
Well, in baseball and the MLB in particular, basically the managers, or what you could call them, the head coaches, the managers are just pawns to carry out the operations of the people in the front office.
What they already decided beforehand.
More so than any other professional sports league. But even in the moment before it went south for the Rays, just when they took Blake Snell out, everybody, it was an overwhelming conclusion by the masses that was not a good move. And you could feel the energy get sucked out of Tampa Bay's defense. Mm-hmm. And you just knew that something was on the horizon and that the Dodgers were chomping at the bit and just licking their chops to get at Nick Anderson. And they were thankful that Kevin Cash pulled Snell out of the game.
They said how, like, they were surprised. They were thankful. They didn't want to face Snell. So, yeah, I see the arguments, and I see why people are upset, and I see why Kevin Cash is getting kind of roasted for it. But, like, Snell had to come into that game knowing what was going to happen. He's going to go 4-5, and if he does anything to question the fact that he's losing it for, you know, the third time through the lineup, he's getting pulled. And so that's my thinking. Like, I know Snell probably thought he was dealing, but also going back to Snell, throughout this year, through the first two times through the lineup, he has like a 1.3 ERA. And then three times through the lineup and more this season, he has an above 7 ERA. So, I mean, like, he's proven this season – he's the Cy Young winner in 2018. He had like a 1.3 ERA, just torched the league. But this year he's proven that he can't make it through that third time through the lineup. I mean, an above 7 ERA is pretty brutal.
And I understand that, but I think the circumstances are just a little different. And would you rather go down with your former Cy Young winning ace, or would you rather go down with your, you know, litany of relievers who just didn't have it this game. I mean,
right.
It's tough either way. I understand what you're saying. You should understand and maybe accept a little bit more what I'm saying and just accept defeat. also, I saw a nice little shot as Kevin Cash was just getting raked across the coals all over the Twitter sphere. Mm-hmm. Someone someone tweeted, at least Kevin Cash did not trade Mookie Betts. So
that's
shots at the ownership and management for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, but, the Red Sox have struggled. But the final kind of quick talking point, Corey Seager, the brother of the all-time Mariners great Kyle Seager, was the World Series MVP. He batted 400 with two homers, five RBIs, and six walks against the Rays in those six games. He had a sixth-inning grounder in Game 6 that allowed Betts to speed home from third base for the go-ahead run that essentially locked in the World Series win. Plays good defense. He kind of had a comeback year almost. He's been struggling. He had injuries, I think, the last year or two.
Yep.
So it was good to see. But the Seager family seems like a family that would be kind of like – it's nice that it happened to him. He seems like a good kid, and I'm happy for the Seager family. Name in general, because
and I'm happy for Kershaw. I'm happy for the Dodgers, period.
Yeah, no,
especially
me too.
After you know everything came out with the Astros and that World Series back in 2017. It was,
they were
I
destined
believe.
To win.
Yeah, and let's not forget they were down 3-1 in the NLCS to Atlanta. So I mean they earned this one, and I'm very okay and satisfied with the way that the World Series played out.
Yep, I would agree as well. Moving on to the next topic here, we have had a lot of movement in college basketball. It's been kind of a weird start to not even the start of the season, but to the start of scheduling for the season. The Zags had a tournament down in Orlando. It was going to be a combination of a couple different tournaments. They were going to be in a bubble. ESPN on over the weekend, specifically on Monday, actually pulled the plug on that, saying that you know the logistics around it wouldn't work. So a lot of fans and a lot of teams were worried about the fact what kind of non-conference games were they actually going to play. The Zags have been killing it in the non-conference scheduling so far this year, already having games against Baylor and Iowa lined up. One of the largest ones now to start the season, the first game of the year will be in less than a month on November 25th in Fort Myers, Florida. The Zags will take on Kansas, which is a sick matchup to start the year off. It's going to be a really weird season, so kind of stay with the team as they go through all this weird stuff. But to start off the year against Kansas, to have games against Iowa, against Baylor, they also have Auburn on November 27th, which is after the Kansas game in Fort Myers, Florida. And then they come back home to play some really cupcake games that they always do later on in December. But looks like college basketball is actually kind of coming together for once. It's been a while, but I'm excited to see what the Zags are able to produce in this weird, crazy season. But what an awesome non-conference schedule for fans.
Yeah, and I feel like that's been, you know, a reoccurring theme for them, especially over the past, like, few years in particular. I mean, even dating back to, I don't know, like 2000. You would know better than me, but it seems like for at least a decade they've been going above and beyond to make sure that they at least get one or two respectable games and opponents on that schedule so that when it comes to selection time, they're a little bit more respected given that they play in the WCC. But, yeah, let's go Zags.
Yeah, I think one of the big things, you know, if we're looking at the projections in ESPN's preseason polls, Baylor's 1, Iowa's 6, Kansas is 9, Tennessee's 11, which hasn't been scheduled yet. So, I mean, they're playing 4 games against top 10 teams, preseason ranking at least. So, good on the Zags. That'll be a really fun season. As we get closer, we'll do more Zag talk. But for now, keep an eye on their schedule changes. They are not expecting to have fans in the Kennel this year, which is going to be a huge bummer. That's going to suck for that. The Zags own the nation's longest home winning streak right now. I think at 29 games, 29 or 39.
Really? I thought BYU went in there and beat them recently. Mm-hmm. Was their last loss at home to BYU, though?
Yeah, probably. Okay, probably in the 2017 season.
Wow. I would have said it was more recent than that, but you would know better than I.
Yeah, it should be, because I was at that game, and it was brutal because it was the first loss of the year. I want to say that's when the last loss was. Maybe the year – no, I think that was it, but – we will see how that goes moving forward. Sticking with basketball, we had more NBA news come through down the pipeline over the last couple days. We'll start off with another coach hiring, which is what we talked about primarily last week. The Houston Rockets have their new head coach, Steven Silas, who was a former Dallas assistant who seems to be pretty excited. Mark Cuban sent out a tweet saying, in all caps, congratulations, coach, and then in lowercase, Stevens, or Silas, sorry. Which was kind of weird. He's an odd guy, but I like him. So that should be a fun matchup, I think, for the Mavericks moving forward.
Yeah, and Rick Carlisle was also very complimentary of Steven Silas and the work that he did, especially with Luka Doncic. He's had some experience working with some of the better point guards in the NBA. He was with Charlotte and when they were the Bobcats, and when they were are the Hornets, working with Kemba Walker. He was also briefly there in Golden State when Steph Curry had been drafted. So the offensive ingenuity is really the claim to fame for Steven Silas as he heads into this Houston Rocket experience and trying to optimize that such a bizarre tandem in James Harden and Russell Westbrook. So we'll see if he can get that to work. Mike D'Antoni had brief success with it, but I just don't know what you do with Russell Westbrook at this point in his career. I really don't.
He's definitely a very, if he can unlock Westbrook and figure out how to use him, I think that would be almost coach of the year worthy, because that has been the toughest thing. I mean, Westbrook hasn't been Russell Westbrook in a couple of years now. It's been kind of a one-man show, and he hasn't been able to really he has potential, he has skill, he has talent, he has athleticism, but it's just not.
He plays
not
so stubbornly, and it's like there's part of that that you love, and it's good, and the energy is always there, and he's always busting his ass. But man, he just, in clutch situations, it's just tunnel vision, deer in the headlights, throwing the ball out of bounds, running into a triple team and trying to throw up, you know, just some stupid shot. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Obviously, we're going to get to the 76ers here in a second, but the Houston Rockets are one of the most interesting offseason storylines, or just offseason teams to look at, because Morey's gone, D'Antoni's gone. We'll see if they still try to exclusively shoot threes and play this brand of small ball and long ball and really play the analytics and the metrics and the numbers, or if there's a little bit of a philosophical change. But then we get into, or did you want to touch on the Jazz first?
One quick thing on the whole Russell Westbrook thing. I think the reason why he's become so selfish this late in his career is because he didn't have a humble upbringing in Seattle. I think was definitely the reason why. But yeah, let's go back real quick, talk about just this whole World Series. We have a couple comments here on the Facebook page. Eric Bjerkestrand said, great costume, and I'm going to assume he means me. No, I mean, it could be you.
Well, now that I'm looking at it, I don't even think that they can see my name tag in the shot. So, yeah, they probably don't. They're just like, wow.
yeah, you better hope
you got glasses on and a button-up shirt, so good on me.
Yeah, this actually looks pretty decent. So let's go over a couple things here. So kind of what I said. So he brought up a really good point. He said that if Snell had stayed in and let up runs, Cash would have been criticized for not following the science. It was a lose-lose for Cash if he lost the game.
Yeah.
And that does go back like to kind of what we were talking about, the whole discussion of – how much power and how much of the law should be put on the manager or the head coach of these franchises. And it's a very good point because, you know, if we want to go back and really open up a wound, Pete Carroll's decision to throw the ball on the 1 yard line, Belichick praised it. And, you know, Bill Belichick isn't a guy to be kind of, you know, like, yeah, dude, great decision to throw there. Like, he was actually adamant, like, I would have thrown the football there as well, even with Marshawn Lynch in the backfield. And so if that touchdown had happened, it would have been the complete reverse, and everyone would have said, wow, Pete Carroll's like one of the greatest coaches of all time for deciding to not run it with his arguable Hall of Fame running back and throw it with an up-and-coming player in Russell Wilson. So it is true, and it's brutal, and because Kevin Cash, for now, until he wins a World Series, will be remembered for the guy who pulled Ian Snell in Game 6 of the World Series in 2020.
No, I understand. And, yeah, you hear all the justification, what the four-down plan was once they got within, you know, or the five, I guess it was, and down to the one and everything. But why are you trying to win the Super Bowl throwing to Ricardo Lockett on just a slant? I mean, do something different. But anyway, yes, to your point, yes, it's a lose-lose. He's not – yes, and perhaps the managers and head coaches receive a little bit too much blame. Lord knows, had the Lakers lost that finals, Frank Vogel would have been eviscerated.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure.
And now nobody really, you know, mentions him and what he did for the team.
And then another quick comment there from Mitchell Cassa. One of the big things people forget about, that once you put in a new pitcher, they have to stay in for at least 3 outs no matter what. So he said that it seems better to leave Snell in until he gives up a hit or a walk instead before when he's, like, because he's still dealing. Because if the new pitcher screws up, you're stuck with him for 3 outs. And so I mean, that, and that's a good point. I think the new rules have really made it tough on managers to kind of, you know, jump from reliever to reliever based on matchups. And so you kind of have to look forward and be like, I'm going to bring in this guy. He may not match up best with this first guy, but I know he's going to, you know, strike out these next two guys. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it kind of does put these managers in these – and I like it. I think the strategy behind it really from MLB's perspective, made sense because a lot of managers are making games too long. It makes managers actually, I think, have to think more when they bring in relievers and strategize more. So I agree with that. I think I'm not saying that Snell should or shouldn't have been pulled. I think just based off of the numbers and the analytics, I think that was the decision that had to be made based off of what they were doing.
No, and I think that's totally fair.
So perfect. All right. The other piece of big news that is that broke yesterday, maybe the day before, is that the Utah Jazz were sold for the first time since
35 years.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
35 years selling majority stake to a tech entrepreneur
for Qualtrics founder Ryan Smith. I don't even know what Qualtrics does, but his name's Ryan Smith. Qualtrics is an American experience management company. With co-headquarters in Provo and Seattle. So, I mean, they look pretty decent.
Wait, there's a Smith in Utah?
Never would have known.
Crazy.
And so the previous ownership had it into a trust, and they had it there only because they wanted to sell to a person or a group who wanted to keep the Utah Jazz in Salt Lake City. And they found it who... with Ryan Smith, who's a lifelong Jazz fan, even played on their, I don't know what it was called then, but like their minor league team, almost like Little Jazz or whatever they called it. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
The Little Can Jazz confirm. Team. And so it's, he had plenty of money. He built Qualtrics and he sold it for $8 billion. So he had a couple of dollars to spare here after this acquisition. So, safe. I think it's a safe sell. I don't think there's any worry here for the Jazz fans. Mm-hmm. But I think that was good for them. And then also, kind of what we were talking about with the Rockets, it's their former GM is now with the Sixers.
President of basketball operations.
Overseeing what Doc Rivers is doing.
Elton Brand is still going to be the general manager there. But now you got Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey. Do you think any differently about these sorry-ass Sixers?
He put together a decent team with Houston. I think the players he had there made it tough for that team to succeed. It's like the players he brought in were good. I just don't think they meshed very well together.
You might have to check me on this, but I think since Morey had been there, I think the Rockets had made the postseason every year, or at least they had some very impressive the Spurs playoff streak, which just ended this past season. But he put together really competent teams, and who knows what he is going to do. Because there are so many questions, right? Because does this mean that the experiment with Simmons and Embiid is over? Are they going to look to shop one of them? If they do look to shop one of them, which one are they going to build the franchise around? Which one's going to go? But you have to keep in mind the reason that this three-point team and these small ball lineups that really were the Houston Rockets, especially over these past 3 or 4 years, the reason why these teams were tailored and built around that sort of style of play was because of the acquisition of James Harden. Mm-hmm. And he even came out and said, Morey, after he stepped down from the Rockets, that Harden changed his life. And it changed the Rockets and it changed the entire brand of Houston Rockets basketball. And I don't know if he's going to take that approach to Philadelphia, because on paper, it looks like that approach would not ideal. Yeah. If you want Ben Simmons to start chucking up threes, like, I'm here for it, because I think that's going to be laughable. And it's going to be good, sorry, entertainment for everybody who is not in on the Sixers or Embiid Simmons hype train. But I don't know. He may completely retool everything and just build around Simmons like he did Harden, just with a different skill set.
Yep. I agree. I think it's a solid move. I think it will be fine. It's just that Sixers franchise is just messed up. They have a lot of issues, but we'll see how that ends.
At least they have Tobias Harris under a max contract.
Oh, thank God for them.
Booyah.
Tobias Harris is definitely worth the max contract.
Booyah.
We have a second awesome sponsor of the show that I really am a fan of.
Yeah.
this time of the year, it's like a perfect time if you really needed things hauled away. There's a lot of yard waste, a lot of junk in your yard that maybe you kept out all summer. That's trash now. But if you need someone to haul that stuff away, Lake City Hauling is who you want to reach out to. Are you working on a remodeling or a cleanup project? Let Lake City Hauling help. Save yourself a stressful trip to the dump by letting them haul the small and big items for you. Lake City Hauling will remove it all. They'll take your unwanted trash, branches, yard waste, furniture, appliances, and anything else your mind can think of or that is laying around in your yard. They offer same-day pickup, and don't forget to check out their 5-star review on Google and see why customers keep coming back to Lake City Hauling for all of their hauling needs. They offer junk removal, also dumpster rentals, and demolition in the Kootenai County area, including the Spokane area. But give them a call and keep them in mind for your next demolition or cleanup projects. Their number is 208-425-4130, and check out their website at Lake City Hauling. They'll haul your junk away.
One haul, that's all.
No,
little
that's
Craig
not
swap in a section.
Yeah.
They might not
be too thrilled about using that little jingle, but I'm here for it. All right, we'll move on to the NFL here real quick. A quick little mention: Eric Reed, former 49er safety, former Carolina safety, who in 2016 was the first player alongside Colin Kaepernick to go to a knee during the national anthem, has been out of a job since last season. Colin Kaepernick has earlier this season talked about how the NFL is blackballing Eric Reed. Unfortunately, the Washington football team actually reached out to Eric Reed this last week and offered him a spot on their practice squad, and he declined. I think that is very showing as to what Eric Reed wants as both a player and as a personality for what he believes in. There are multiple players, including Snacks Harrison of the Seahawks, Michael Kendricks of the Seahawks, and Dez Bryant of the Ravens, who have taken former stars, by the way, who specifically Dez Bryant and Snacks, who went to the practice squad to earn their spot on the active roster and to get football ready, and yet Eric Reed continues to not take this position, even though the Washington football team was the only team to give him a chance at playing this season. Any thoughts on that? I mean, I just think how do I put this? Anyway, Eric Reed should have taken that spot because now who's going to be interested in a guy who doesn't want to start on a practice squad and earn his way up, work his way up. So
I don't know. I'm sure he'll get some consideration down the line this season.
Once injuries kick in. Earl Thomas doesn't have a team, I don't think Eric Reed is going to get on a team.
Yeah, Earl Thomas, man.
Which is weird. What a fall from grace.
That's awful.
We'll see what happens there with
him. That guy sucks.
Speaking of guys who have some mental question marks, Antonio Brown signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Monday. He flew down to Tampa on Saturday. I picked him up on my fantasy team for the fourth time in 2 years. It's finally going to pay off as long as he doesn't do something stupid again for like the 18th time in the last 2 years. But probably a good move for the Bucs. They have injuries at wide receiver. They have a solid locker room with Tom Brady at the top, a lot of veterans in that locker room, and a coach in Bruce Arians who does not let players mess around or he's a player's coach with a very, tough spine, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to know what happened behind the scenes or internally within the Bucs organization because in the offseason, Arians was like, no, ain't happening, no way. He coached with Antonio Brown. He was on that mm-hmm. Steelers coaching staff.
Yep.
He knows Antonio Brown very well, and he's like, nope, not my kind of guy, ain't happening. Mark Jackson, not in my locker room. And now he's on the Bucs. He did come out and say Bruce Arians did. He said, Mike Evans only got 2 targets. You didn't hear him complaining about it. All he cares about is winning. Same thing goes for Godwin. Same thing goes for, all the tight ends on the roster.
That's the Brady way, too.
It is the Brady way, absolutely. So he said that if Antonio Brown comes in to that team, in that locker room, and displays anything different from that mindset and mentality of win first, then it's not going to work and it's not going to happen. Yep. I do think Brady is going to be a good, I don't know if I want to say life coach, but I think he's going to be a good sturdy figure for Antonio Brown. And I think Brown has a lot of respect for Brady. I think that can only bode well for the prospect of that relationship and that tandem on the field going forward in Tampa Bay. But interesting signing. The rich get richer.
All right, we have another comment here for some NFL discussion. Max Shepard said, before the season started, my buddy and I made a bet regarding Juju Smith-Schuster getting 1,200 yards this season. I took the under. He took the over. Through week 7, who looks like they'll come out on top? Juju Smith-Schuster threw six games, has 279 yards receiving. That puts him on pace for actually probably like 850, 900 yards probably this season. I'd like to know what that bet was. I'd like to know what kind of money is involved or favors or.
Yeah, I mean, so based on what we just said and based on what currently is the case, the under is looking pretty strong.
Under is looking very strong.
I actually think I probably would have taken the over.
I probably would have taken the over, too,
before the season started, definitely. Yeah. But Deontay Johnson and obviously the emergence of Chase Claypool there has been huge and a revolution for the Pittsburgh offense. Mm-hmm. Really, that guy has all the tangibles and intangibles of being the number one. And early on in his rookie season, he's already kind of surpassed Juju Smith as that Schuster as that number one anyway. So, yeah.
So we're going to talk really quick here about the Seahawks game before we move on to the NFL picks. I'm going to go over some of my biggest problems with this team and specifically this game.
Oh, do you have problems with this team?
I have
can you objectively assess some of the issues that may be present within that Seahawks?
The Seahawks are lucky that we don't have the show on Monday because I would have laid into them way harder than I'm about
to. Or Sunday night, for that matter.
Or Sunday night because, I walked out of my parents' house without saying a word. I grabbed my keys, I grabbed my wallet, and I just walked out because I get furious. And I drove home. I didn't listen to the postgame show. I turned on some classic rock, and I just kind of melted my problems away.
Nice.
For then. Before I got home. But, so I, like I said, I haven't been that upset about a Seahawks loss in a long time. They had that. They were leading for 3.5 hours, and then they gave up the game-winning field goal with a couple minutes left in overtime, so that was very infuriating. One thing that's very frustrating is the defense playing so soft. And, you know, in the direct aftermath of that game, I was really upset because they continued to play off coverage on that overtime final drive. First, it was Dunbar / Trey Flowers on the outside, on the right outside corner spot. And then it was Trey Flowers. And then on the left outside corner, it was he was also playing off coverage. And that allowed Larry Fitz to catch the underneath pass and pick up like 12 yards or whatever he did right before they kicked that game-winning field goal. So that really, really upset me. And then I thought about it more in a larger viewpoint of that game because they've been playing so much off coverage this year. And I realized that the starting lineup of the Seahawks defense hasn't played together outside of like 50 snaps in week two. Because Dunbar wasn't there in week one, and then he was there in week two, and then Adams got hurt week two, and then Jamal Adams hasn't played all year. And then so then I was kind of giving the benefit of the doubt a little bit, but then I went back to like, well, I get that, but like I want to play aggressive Seahawks defense. Like I don't care. You know, we're not going to give up big shots down the field in theory. We probably will. But it was so frustrating because they've been playing the soft defense that is not well, we're not used to seeing, and they're not hitting hard. It's just been very infuriating.
Their tackling is bad too. I mean, especially their open space tackling.
It doesn't make any sense because the Seahawks literally are like the champions of good safe tackling. They release a video.
I mean,
every
they were. They
know,
were.
And I don't know if it's because
it's a thing of the past, man.
These are the
defenses that we've had to grown accustomed to over the past couple of years. I don't even want to touch on the defense anymore because I feel like just watching them week in and week out, it speaks for itself. I mean, we'll see if the acquisition of Dunlap does anything. I'm not super optimistic that it'll be huge. It can't hurt, that's for sure. But, let's put DK on, you know, the defensive line and see if he can get after the quarterback because there's just no pass rush. And I told you, like, and the Cardinals have smart play calling. And that's why I'm not super optimistic about this matchup this week against San Francisco either because Kyle Shanahan is a smart coach and our defense is not good and it's not coached well. It's not put in positions given the personnel to succeed. But can we talk about how Russ had an off game?
He did. I think it was the Cardinals defensive scheme that was kind of giving him some issues, especially on that Buda Baker interception. But like the throw to DK in the end zone that was picked,
that one you can put on DK a little bit.
I think Russ expected DK to continue toward the end zone and he didn't. So that one was unfortunate. The Buda Baker one, you know, Baker started up kind of around the line of scrimmage and then right before the ball was snapped, he went back to his safety spot and then immediately the snap as they brought that, it looked like almost like they brought the corner or the edge defender and blitzed Russ. And so when Wilson saw that, he knew that he would have the guy in the flat. And so he kind of just did a little lob because he wasn't expecting him to be over there.
That wasn't a little lob. Russell lobs those throws. You see it, you know, whether it's the fullback or the tight end rolling out. But he moonballed.
He did. And I think, his confidence is so high right now that I think he kind of felt invincible. And I get that. I do, because how can you not? I mean, he has been playing so well up to that point. And he still had a really good – he threw for the most yards in his career in the first half, 250 yards. And so I think he felt in very good shape. That was even after the pick six. Almost pick six, I should say.
And so to be fair to Russ, after I kind of came down from the height of my emotions during the game, it's like, okay, so he had three opportunities, one at the end of regulation and then two in overtime, to go and put the game away.
Like he did in Minnesota.
We're just trained to expect that is going to happen, especially with that many opportunities with three. And it didn't.
It was so frustrating. It got more frustrating every time.
Honestly, we're kind of just spoiled with Russ and just being accustomed to seeing him pull out these games. And so when it doesn't happen, it's world-breaking.
Everyone's
earth-shattering.
It is. And that was part of my emotional breakdown.
It was for me, too. Once I kind of, had a clear head and I was like, okay, well, let's really look at this. They should have won the game. They really should have. That defense is awful. Also, that personal foul on Bobby Wagner that kept the Arizona offense on the field and led to a scoring drive was the officiating entirely was awful. I hate John Hussey. That guy sucks. That guy.
Yeah.
He emphasizes so strangely on which words. It's like 5-yard penalty in his concaved upper lip. I hate that guy. You suck. It was even before this game. You're a putz, dude. Get off my TV screen. I don't want you on Sunday night. Roger Goodell, figure it out.
Make it happen.
That team sucked.
We should have that video, but that is all right. If you watched that Seahawks game, you know exactly the play that we are talking about. It was a pass to the tight end, and Bobby Wagner was coming across the middle from the right, and it was a bad pass, actually. But from Bobby's angle, so the tight end goes up like this. Bobby's coming from this side. The ball's over here. But Bobby hits him. He takes about 3/4 of a step. So he was already kind of in the process of going toward this guy. And then he literally, not even with his shoulder, not with his head, he literally pushes him with two hands and knocks him down.
It's so reactionary. It's because of the tight end getting hit from behind. So his neck snaps a little bit and the hit looks like it's hard in real time. And that's why the flag comes out, not because like any rule was actually breached. But, I don't know.
No two-hand touch.
That was awful. Also, Benson Mayo, dude, that was awful.
Well, that probably cost Seahawks
two penalties on one play.
They're up by 10 with what? It was 4 minutes left, 4.5 minutes left, five, maybe.
Arizona
maybe.
Had to settle for a field goal on 4th and 12. Not only was he offsides, but he also used leverage to launch himself after already being offsides and being like, well, I just screwed the pooch anyway. So that ended up leading to a Christian Kirk touchdown.
A very quick Christian Kirk touchdown, which was also another big bummer because – had they held them, because they needed all the time that they could get to get that tying field goal at the end of regulation, so that kind of ruined everything. But I do think the acquisition of Carlos Dunlap alongside Jamal Adams getting healthy, with Shaq Griffin getting healthy, Quentin Dunbar staying healthy, I think will make a big difference, because Dunlap, he's only 31, and as recent as
which
last
is crazy,
season,
because he was in Cincinnati like 10 years. For 10 years. Yeah,
he had 9 sacks last year on 21 QB hurries. This season he has, I think, 294 snaps played, if I'm remembering that right, 1 sack and I think like 3 QB hurries, but in a part-time role for the first time in his career with Cincinnati, and he wasn't happy there. After their loss, he went on Instagram and put his house up for sale. He said, get
fully
me out of
furnished
here.
Too.
Fully
furnished.
Fully, or we can take it, up to you. So he wanted out, and he wanted out now. He grabbed his parking sign out from Cincinnati, and he was traded that day to Seattle. So he's going through COVID protocols. He'll practice next week, and he will be on the field week 9 against the Bills. Snacks Harrison should be playing. I don't know if he'll make it back. He should make it back this week, actually.
He's not.
They just – because they had to cut a defensive tackle, Anthony
Rush,
who continued to get hurt. But by next week – we should have Snacks, Jamal Adams, and Carlos Dunlap all coming back to the field or making their appearance.
I don't think Shaq is going to play. He's still in concussion protocol.
Yeah,
unless something like dramatic happens on Friday, I don't think he's going to be playing.
He's running out of time.
Yeah, he is. And I don't even know if Jamal Adams is going to play this week because he was limited in practice today. Man, I keep thinking today's Friday. It's really not.
It's yeah,
big bummer. Can we talk about something that is a little bit more uplifting? Or at least for me.
Maybe for you, but in just a second.
Do you have something? Do you want to stave off the inevitable?
You do real quick. Not a big deal, but Mariners just re-signed Kendall Graveman.
Thank God.
Who was he played pretty well. They found a tumor in his neck, dude. Like, he played through a tumor in his neck.
Okay.
How does that make you feel?
Well, Ron Rivera's playing through chemo, so.
At least the Washington Redskins football team beats something.
I'm just saying, if we're doing a scoreboard thing, I think Ron's got him beat. Riverboat.
He probably does. Yeah, I guess we can move on to the fact that my teams that I picked screwed me royally, and it's not my fault.
Yeah, so going into last week of games, you had a 3-game lead.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that was your largest lead in the standings to date.
Felt a very comfortable 3-game lead.
And you squandered it all in 1 week, and now we are tied again. I went 13-1. There was only one game. Screw you, Dallas Cowboys. All I got.
It was a stupid week. My teams I picked were garbage. See, what's crazy though is 10-4 isn't a bad week though. Or what'd you say you went?
No, it's 13-1. Yeah, you went 10-4.
Okay.
So yeah, really not a bad week.
Yeah,
but
that's
I was just stupid.
Yeah, your teams just are stupid.
I'm just more.
Yeah, we'll go over this real quick, a little bit quicker than usual. First game of the week tonight, we have the Falcons at the Panthers.
Panthers.
I'm gonna
Atlanta is cursed.
I'm gonna
Atlanta
go with Atlanta.
Is so cursed.
I'm gonna go with Atlanta.
Okay, cool.
There is no Christian McCaffrey on Thursday. If Christian McCaffrey was back, I'd pick the Panthers for sure. Then we have Patriots at the Bills.
Okay, so the Bills, that was kind of an alarming display of really not dominance against the Jets, beating them 18-10. But Bills, because the Patriots are in free fall.
Eventually, I would have to think the Patriots figure something out, but Cam Newton was awful. He finished with -0.3 fantasy points and gifted me a win against my buddy Scotty this week in fantasy. So thank you, Cam Newton, for being terrible. I'm also going to pick the Bills.
Cool.
Titans at the Bengals.
Titans.
I also have the Titans. Raiders at the Browns.
Okay,
this is the dream scenario
for the AFC Championship game. In my lifetime, I want to see the Raiders and the Browns in the AFC Championship game. Give me the Raiders.
Well, it's not happening this year. I also am going to pick the Raiders.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, damn. Okay. Thought we were going to go
Browns?
Different ways on that one.
Oh, God, no. I hate the Browns.
Yeah, me too.
and
I want to love them, but.
No, I can't.
And
then Colts at the Lions.
Colts.
Also the Colts. Then Vikings at the Packers.
Packers.
This should have been a good game, but it's not Packers. Jets at Kansas City.
Could you imagine? Can we just stop and take a second to just think about what if the Jets –
The NFL would collapse on itself like a black hole.
Yep.
Chiefs. Rams at the Dolphins.
Rams, I think this could be fun, but I don't see Tua being able to get his first dub against that defense.
Yeah, I really want to pick Miami, but I won't. The Rams have actually looked decent the last 2 weeks. Then we have the Steelers at the Ravens, which probably is the game of the week.
This was tough, and thank you, NFL, for just declining to flex us into the Sunday night slot. Thank God we get a prime NFC East matchup. But I'm going to go with the Steelers.
Darn it.
Were you too?
No, yeah. Go ahead. Go with the Ravens.
I don't want to, though. Lamar can't throw the ball.
So Steelers?
Yeah, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Steelers.
They just
too.
Have more ways to win, especially on offense, man. I mean,
yeah, that one's tough.
It is.
Chargers at the Broncos.
Chargers. I am a Herbert supporter, believer, endorser, and I am the single. I'm going to be a Chargers fan from here on out. I love their new uniforms. I love Justin Herbert. Yeah, give me the Chargers.
Yeah, I also have the Chargers. Saints at the Bears, which actually should be a pretty good game, too, especially if Michael Thomas doesn't play.
Saints.
I want to pick the Bears. I really want to pick the Bears.
Do it. You got ground to make up, buddy.
No, I don't. We're tied.
True. But it feels like you got ground to make up, buddy.
No, I can't. I'm sorry. I got to pick the Saints.
Okay.
Then we have the awesome, like you said, the awesome Sunday night game. The Cowboys at the Eagles.
Give me the Eagles. I'm going to black out so I don't have to watch this game.
On Sunday night?
I'm just going to day drink, yeah, so that I don't have to put up with this.
Blacked out on Saturday?
Yeah. Well, hey, no.
Well, we'll see where the night takes us.
That's an assumption.
Then on Monday night, the Tampa Bay at the Giants. We're going to pick the same teams, unless you pick the Niners.
No. Oh, you Bucks.
Bucks. Are you?
The Bucks are officially a problem. The Bucks are a problem.
Yeah, they really are. All right, Niners at the Seahawks.
Give me San Francisco.
There we go. That's
Seattle has played like dog dung in their last two games. San Francisco is clicking and firing on all cylinders. Their play calling is what we thought it would be. And they're running the ball. The last time a potent running attack showed up against the Seahawks, it was Dalvin Cook. And the only reason that subsided was because Dalvin Cook, there are three certainties in life: taxes, death, and Dalvin Cook getting injured. So because of that, that was the only reason that that run game slowed down in that Sunday night matchup against Seattle a few weeks ago. The Niners are going to run the ball all over the place. All that motion, all the sweeps and everything. Debo Samuel is out. That does play into our favor a little bit. But I just trust Kyle Shanahan more than I do Ken Norton. And I don't feel great about the Seahawks after last week. And I'm positioning myself in a place to either be right or pleasantly surprised, and I can live with either of those outcomes. So give me the Niners.
Yeah, no, that does work out well for you there. But I'm going to pick the Seahawks, and I'll get upset if they don't win, and then I'll be upset because I'll go a game down, because this is the only game that we picked different, which is highly upsetting.
No, you went with the Falcons. I went with the Panthers.
Oh, okay, so I'll win that one.
I hope so.
All right, let's move on here real quick. We're on a little bit of a time crunch. We're going over here, but that's all right. We're the locker room, and we can do what we want, I think. Then we have our jabronis of the week.
Mm-hmm. You're first.
I'm first this week? All right. What do we got here? I don't even remember what I sent.
Nice.
Oh, right. I remember now. Right. Okay. I have to get settled here. So, yeah, we have a kicker for the Rice Owls who was going for a 45-yard attempt. They needed one score. They needed one field goal to secure the win in their first game of the season, setting up the 45-yard attempt. And kicker, Colin Riccatelli? All right, Riccatelli, R-I-C-C.
You're going to say Rigatoni.
Close. Yeah, Riccatelli lines up for the 45-yard field goal attempt, and he does this. All right, so we have the kick here. It goes up, off the right goalpost, off the crossbar, off the left goalpost, off the crossbar, and out. We have our first quad doink.
I feel like they should just give them the points for that. It's more impressive than actually nailing the field goal.
Oh, they're so upset. They're so upset.
I would be. That's America's team, the Rice Owls.
The Rice Owls? What a soft mascot.
Are you kidding me? That's badass, man. No. Owls are wise. Have you seen a wingspan on an owl? You ever seen an owl in person?
I take a bald eagle over an owl 10 times out of 10.
It's because you're basic AF,
man. No, it's because I'm an American.
That's why. Okay, great.
I'm an American who supports KFC, obviously, I guess. Owls can piss off. So I don't want to, this guy already feels bad. Colin Riccatelli already feels bad, but I'm going to call him a jabroni anyway for screwing that up.
It's Rigatoni.
If it's Rigatoni, then I can't. Then these glasses don't work.
Okay.
So that's my jabroni of the week. Poor Riccatelli, the Owls, the Rice Owls. That's a soft team.
Yeah. I got a little twofer for my jabronis of the week. I think we're going to start off with LeBron here because you slacked a little bit this week in not incorporating LeBron into our weekly program. So I thought I would do you the favor and bring LeBron back in
just
to the conversation. I don't know if this was actually a real post that he made or not, but if you're looking at the screen, it's the pose. It's LeBron. It's God damn dude. You got to get out of L.A.
What a douche.
Stop.
No, he's a douche. God, that
No,
that
that's not even
me.
A douche move. That's just
yes,
like,
it is. I can't believe this is my life. Dude, you've had this life for 15 years.
I do like that he's covering up his hairline with his hand, though. That's a slick move,
God.
LeBron.
He needs this wig.
But, man, if this is not the epitome of L.A. and just celebrities being gross, especially as it pertains to the election and all the stuff that they're doing and putting out there, like celebrities being naked and telling people to go vote. Like, what the hell are you guys doing? Get a grip. La La Land, not a good look. But anyway, so LeBron, good. Good on you, man. But the second one was hilarious. So Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator of the Dallas Cowboys, obviously having a great year because the Dallas Cowboys defense has been one of the best in the league.
Right up there with the Seahawks.
He had to end a Zoom call prematurely. And if you look at the tweet, kind of describing what happened. So he had Tabasco on his finger, and then he poked himself in the eye.
Is this guy an idiot?
I mean, he wasn't in the league for a long time and then ended up getting a job given to him by Mike McCarthy. But can you just think about that? Can you just visualize that?
I wish I was in that conference call, that Zoom call.
That is the Dallas Cowboys season.
Like, how do you? Like,
that is the Dallas Cowboys.
He's sitting there. You know, I don't know if he has glasses, but I'll just kind of bring these down. You know, a little bit.
Bridge
him
the nose.
He's like, in the middle of his call, like, oh God, and then like just trying to squint.
I like to think he just blatantly lifted up glasses. I actually don't even think he was wearing glasses and just poked himself in the eye, like intentionally, full blown, point of the finger, just.
Well, that's what the Cowboys' defense has been all season, is just poking themselves in the eye,
yep,
like consistently by giving up so many points. Also, this isn't a Facebook comment, but I did get a text from my buddy Tim who said I look like Big Daddy from Django Unchained. Right here.
Yeah, you do.
Which he looks like the Colonel Sanders, too. I think who directed that?
That's a sex Quentin god Tarantino, right there. Right? Yeah, Tarantino.
So I think Tarantino pulled KFC, some Colonel Sanders look there for Big Daddy. So I think that's some copyright issues. I'm going to have to reach out to him.
Yeah, would you please?
Quentin. So that's pretty funny. That's a good take there. All right. Well, that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Was that your time?
No. I have a closing time.
You had two jabronis?
I had two jabronis. It was a twofer.
Can't do that.
Do you listen to me?
No, I don't. I was busy laughing.
Goddamn
I was busy laughing at the Big Daddy reference.
All right. So I'm just going to go ahead and give my closing time. So Baltimore and Pittsburgh are playing each other. Nice prime divisional matchup this week for one of the best rivalries in football as well as in sports. And so Harbaugh and Tomlin are going to make a little bit of history, as Sunday will mark the 25th time in the regular season that those two coaches have matched up against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Tomlin had faced Marvin Lewis of the Cincinnati Bengals 24 times. This is going to eclipse that mark. And it's awesome that the Steelers and the Ravens rivalry, they're both good. Again, this is going to be the first Roethlisberger versus Lamar matchup. And I'm just, I don't know, I'm glad to see it. I hope it's as physical. Obviously, the defenses are not what they used to be. Pittsburgh's defense, a lot of new faces in comparison to when this rivalry was really in its prime. But, yeah, I'd love to see the physicality. Willie Colon was on Ryan Russillo's podcast this week talking about what it was like to play in those divisional matchups between the Steelers and the Ravens. Yeah. And just the mindset that they had to get themselves into going into Sunday and knowing that it was actually going to be a bloodbath and that people were going to die. So, yeah, that's my closing time. A little bit of history on Sunday morning.
Was that a Ray Lewis hit? Somebody's gonna
Ryan
die.
Clark, it was the Willis McGahee thing. Ryan Clark had blown some people up. Hines Ward would always go out and set the tone and blow some people up. Basically, if you didn't have eyes in the back of your head, even if you were away from the ball on the field, you were going to get clocked.
Yeah.
I think it was awesome.
It was awesome. That was a very good rivalry for sure that hopefully is kind of
re-energized, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, I have my closing time here. I just have a photo of a guy, but I want to start off with this closing time saying that I love living here. I love this state. And I'm born and raised in Spokane, but God, this state sucks. This state really can blow sometimes. One of the things is sports betting is legal across the country. They made that a thing. Washington State's like, we're not going to really jump at that because we're idiots. And so you can't even do DraftKings. You can't do any sports betting inside of Washington State. And that blows. Like, I would love to be able to go on DraftKings and spend, like, it's probably good, actually. But I would like to be able to pick games and do prop bets and stuff on DraftKings. Anyway, this ties into every single week DraftKings does I don't know what they call it, but it's essentially like the perfect lineup. Essentially, if you score the most amount of points in this pool based off of the players and that you pick for your team, if you have the most points scored, you win $1 million. And they do this all the time. If you're not the sole person of the best lineup, you then become, you split the pot. And so five people ended up splitting the pot this last week. because Rob Huntsey, a 41-year-old insurance agent from St. Louis, he filled out a number of lineups in this DraftKings showdown for the game between the Chicago Bears and the Rams. One of his lineups featured the Bears' defense, one of the top-scoring players for the night. Right before the end of the game, he checked his lineup. He had 92.79 points, which was first, and he was all alone. He had $1 million. He was going to win it. There was no chance that he could have lost. So he went out. He took his dog for a walk. He called some friends and family saying, like, this might happen, and he was super excited. He came back, checked it again, and it is what no fantasy player ever wants to see, a stat correction. He lost $1 million because the stat correctors inside of this game ended up calling a sack by the Chicago Bears a tackle on a run by Jared Goff. That led to him losing $1 million. He only made $3,000. He went from $1 million. He lost 1 point. So he 1 point, and he ended up taking home $3,078.94 instead of the million that he thought he won. He said it was heartbreaking on many levels to ESPN. He had also lost out on $5,000 in a different contest because of a stat correction. What a brutal week if you are Rob Huntsey from St. Louis, Missouri.
Dude, I got nothing to say. That
I would disappear. I would disappear.
Do a little Steve Barton.
If I lost $1 million, I mean, from what I read, I didn't look at the play. He said this. He was like, there is no way that wasn't a sack. DraftKings called up the NFL, like, hey man, like, we really can't let this guy win the full million. Like, yeah. You got it. It's like the Buffalo Wild Wings commercials. Where
right.
Hit a button.
Right.
And, like,
and
makes the game go into overtime.
The player. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was. That was pretty interesting, but
dude, that sucks.
Yeah, that does that suck. Really sucks. That really sucks. That would ruin. So that's why this state sucks. Is we can't have sports betting. DraftKings is not available to people like us, which is a big bummer. This is a call out to Jay Inslee and the rest of the Washington State Legislature. Get this stuff done, especially if you get reelected. That's what I want. That's the only reason why I'd be happy. Is if you were able to get that done. I also am supposed to say that something's finger-licking good. That's what I keep getting asked. But I couldn't think of a great place to swoop it in. But I think the locker room is finger-licking good.
What about Lucky Bird?
Lucky Bird and Lake City Hauling are finger-licking good. But don't lick your fingers if you haul dirty garbage and stuff away. You're just asking for some sort of staph infection. I don't know if you
know what else is finger-licking good. If you ask Jameis Winston, a dub.
Crab?
No, well, that too. Do you not remember when he was dub on the sidelines and he was biting into it and whole team's like, what the hell are you doing?
And now he's a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Like a lot of these so-called stars from college, or they're just out of the league, like Money Manziel.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, we have plans this weekend. What are you doing for Halloween?
I have a party that I'm supposed to go to. It's supposed to be an ugly party, so I might just go as Ed Sheeran, just like put my hair down.
So like yourself.
That seems like, right, exactly. Because people say that all the time, which is great.
I
get lumped
that,
into so many ugly redheads. Carson Wentz, Prince Harry.
That's a good one.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Could be worse.
Yeah, I got to do that, and then I'm going to watch football. So, you know, just the typical weekend things.
Yeah, I have a party at my cousin's. It's a kind of a costume party. I'm not going to win. But I do, like I said, I do have the mustache and the goatee to go along with this. I just didn't want to break them out and ruin them for this, you know, this show. The show's not worth it, essentially, is what I'm saying. So that is all we have for this week. Have a fun Halloween weekend. First time I think that there's been a full moon on Halloween since, like, the 40s. In 40 years. I think the 40s. Anyway, it's been a long time since there's been a full moon on Halloween. So take advantage of that. There's going to be a lot of crazies out there.
I just got a text from my friend. He said, hey, can you give your co-host a titty twister on camera? I'm watching right now and would pay to see that.
What kind of friends do you have?
Really cool ones. He's actually one of my favorite friends.
What's his name?
Shout out Matt.
Matt what?
Matt Henley.
Look up Matt Henley on Facebook or Instagram and give him a hard time.
You'll see a sex god. Anyway, yeah. let's wrap this bitch up.
All right. Well, have a nice weekend. This is The Locker Room, your Spokane's only continuous and long-running, at this point, 21 episodes of The Locker Room. Go Spokane. The state still sucks, but I love it. Have a great weekend. See you next time.
Thanks for watching The Locker Room on Spokane Talks. Check us out on Facebook as well as our other platforms. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation by emailing us at info@SpokaneTalksOnline.com. And for more sports news, opinions, and content, follow Justin and me on Twitter.